Summertime is here and in full swing, and the late spring rains may be behind us, but there's a lot of green in the landscape still. Flowers and food plants are popping up in gardens all over the place. Early in the pandemic, when many people took up gardening for something to do, we reached out to Jackson County Master Gardeners and found Lynn Kunstman, who joins us weekly during the growing season to field our many questions on successful gardening. Lynn, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good to be here.
Our apologies. We had the phone line open a little early, so people might have heard a few murmurs during Marketplace Tech. I don't think you said anything scandalous.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, the problem was on our end. It was just a switch out of position. So let's talk about things like the kinds of damage that might be showing up in plants in the gardens, because I was reading that some things that can, we talked in the past about overwatering can also look like what plants get in drought stress, but some situations like yellowings of leaves could be diseases, could be bugs. How do you kind of figure those things out?
Well, you can always bring a sample of the leaves into the plant clinic here on campus and see if they can ID what's going on. They can probably ID whether it's an insect issue. The good thing to do is first check around the base of the plant and see if there's any insect damage down there. See if there are anything living in the mulch or in the soil around your plant. Bring the leaves in or send a photo in to the plant clinic and see if they can ID if it's a wilt or something of that sort, if they can give you a hand with those questions. Nothing beats a regular inspection. I've been going out and noticed my squash leaves were looking pretty damaged, and I already have squash bugs and cucumber beetles, and they're just in there munching away and destroying stuff. So always good to inspect. So you just crush them or put them in a bucket of soapy water or whatever.
The squash bugs in particular you've mentioned in the past have been they are quite persistent. It sounds like
they're horrific. So I found the good technique that I'm using now is I go out in the evening and I water the entire shrub. After the kind of the sun is down behind, not direct sun on the plant, and the bugs don't like the water, and so they run to high ground, which means they come up into the leaves, and then I grab the little jerks and I crush them. Very satisfying.
We have talked
very
about
satisfying.
This before. Yeah, you just squeeze
50,
their little heads.
50, yeah, pinch off their little heads. They make a very satisfying pop when you crush them, and they smell really bad. Squash bugs are icky. And then I look on the underside of the leaves for the eggs. They have very coppery, very distinct coppery-colored eggs that the females kind of tuck down in the veins where the leaf pedicel, the stem of the leaf, meets the leaf blade. And they'll tuck these little triangles of eggs in there. And if you take duct tape and wrap it around, sticky side out around your fingers and just touch those to the eggs, those eggs come right off onto that sticky tape. And then you throw that in a bucket of soapy water, and that's satisfying as well.
Okay. I was going to ask you about where it goes from there, but then I forgot about the bucket of soapy water. But
yeah, bucket of soapy water. Just some dish soap in a bucket with some water. And,
Do they float on top? I don't want to get too
The tape will float for a while, but eventually it sinks because it gets waterlogged, and of course the soap dissolves the cuticle of the egg and any exoskeletons of the little nymphs. You can also pick up the little baby instars, the early very tiny black nymphs with the tape. That's very effective, and then they drown and go away too.
Okay. I was going to ask you what the soap purpose was, and not just to make the water wetter, but apparently also just to have a biological effect on the critters.
Right. Yeah, it actually gets in through the exoskeleton and messes with their little physiological processes.
All right, so we were talking about where to find them. I start looking around the base of the plant. So generally they're going to come from below some of the more destructive ones.
Yeah, well, the cucumber beetles fly in, and we have two kinds of cucumber beetles, diabroticas, which are the spotted green, they look like a spotted green ladybug, kind of. They're the kind of that shape. And then we have the striped cucumber beetles, and those often will be inside the flowers, just destroying the flowers and messing with pollination. So you can look in the squash blossoms for the striped cucumber beetles, but they fly. So they're much harder to catch and deal with than the squash bugs, which do not fly.
Ah, okay. Squash bugs make themselves easier targets for you, do they?
They do indeed. Yeah, but they live, the squash bugs live in the soil. They live down in the detritus in the soil. And so they're there. They overwinter in, you know, in the soil.
And despite their name, they'll go after more than just the squash, right?
Really?
Really?
I've never seen them on other things, although maybe that's the case. I've never seen them on anything else but squash. And particular types of squash, even. They prefer zucchini and certain of the winter squashes. And then they'll move to, like, cucumbers or, you know, if they're desperate. If they've destroyed the squash hills, then they try to move on to other cucurbits. Yeah, they're really evil.
it's a long, lifelong sort of. I'm looking on the list, the pest control solution chart that you provided. That I'll make sure we put that back up now on the website.
That's really helpful because there's that grid of what insect do you have, what are the organic things you can use on it, and once again, just to remind people, always spray either before the sun comes up or after the sun goes down, because by then the little squash bees have gotten into the blossoms to spend the night. They're not going to get hit by anything you're putting on. The other pollinators have gone to their nests in the ground or in their stems, and they are not going to be at risk when you spray neem oil or, you know, some other thing to deal with the other icky things that are eating your plants.
And I'm still looking for squash bugs on the list, though. To see where they show the cucumber beetles, no, Colorado potato beetle I see on here. But so where do the squash bugs show up on the list?
I don't know. They should be listed as squash bugs. Are things in alphabetical order? Might be on this.
I think you get your phone tucked in a funny place. We can barely hear you.
Oh, sorry. I just wondered if they were in alphabetical order because
they are. We got ants, aphids, apple maggots, etc.
Flip the page.
Oh,
there are two sides because there are so many garden pests.
Uh-huh.
You want to have, you know, you want to have A to Z. So they're probably down in the S section. And they should be listed.
Oh, wait a minute. It looks like both sides of the page are the same. Okay.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
Okay.
Oh,
this got printed wrong. Okay. Well,
yeah, there's a second side of the page and I am not near a computer, so I can't pull that up for you. But yeah, there are two sides to that page.
I do have both sides because I can see it starts with Avenger on one side for the and then Nemix on the top of the other one.
Yeah.
Followed by Organicide and Parasitic Nematodes. You know, that's the one that always gets me, Parasitic Nematodes. So basically you can, and we certainly do, I mean, people have bought ladybugs for years, but stuff like that to bug, you know, bugs to get rid of your bugs.
Yeah, ladybugs fly away. That's the problem with ladybugs and mantids and, you know, the other things out there. What you want to do is provide a garden that will entice those insects in, those flying insects in. And the best way to do that is plant things in the Apiaceae family, the carrot family, that have tiny, tiny, tiny flowers in umbels. And those panicles of those flowers, so hundreds of little tiny flowers, and that attracts all the little beneficial parasitic and predatory wasps and flies. They come to nectar at those because they need to be doing that. But then when they lay eggs, they lay them in caterpillars and in other insects, and there are things like assassin bugs and all kinds of predatory insects out there that you can encourage to come to your garden if you're growing a diverse floral resource for them. So that's a really important thing. The predatory nematodes are really cool because they will attack the soil organisms that might be causing trouble for you. So fungus gnats are a typical thing that people get when they're watering too much, and the fungus gnats will, the larval stage, eats the roots of plants. They're really, really bad, and they're especially bad in potted plants. But if you purchase predatory nematodes, then water, they're so small that what you do is you put them into a watering can, add, you know, a gallon of water, and then you pour them on your plants, on the soil around your plants. They live in the soil, and they hunt fungus gnat larvae and other larvae that are living in the soil. So they are very, very voracious. They're extremely tiny, but they're very effective.
No, but these are not the same nematodes that are going to, like, eat your potatoes, those kinds of things.
These are not the nematodes that eat your potatoes. Those are the bad nematodes. The predatory nematodes will eat the nematodes that eat your potatoes.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Everybody eats something.
Wow, the process has just boggled the mind again.
I know. It is stunningly, nature is stunningly complex, and people don't appreciate what's going on in the soil, or even in an acorn, where there are whole colonies of ants that live in acorns for a 3-year period after the acorn falls to the ground and has been eaten out by a weevil. The ants then take that little acorn shell and they live in it for 3 years until it decomposes, and then they find another hollow acorn. So those kinds of things are happening all around us, and none of us know about them or notice them.
Well, we wouldn't if we hadn't been talking to you. So that's one of the reasons we have Lynn Kunstman on here every week, a master gardener from Jackson County Master Gardeners. What question do you have about the stuff that lives in your garden and how you can work with it and perhaps work against the things that are trying to defeat your garden? Join us on The Exchange with your questions and comments by phone at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org, as did Kate in Ashland, who says, Lynn, can you guess as to the identity of a small caterpillar-like critter living in the top inch of soil that is light brown, about an inch long? I'm thinking army worm or Japanese beetle grub. And with squash bugs, have you tried diatomaceous earth at the stem, or is that futile? Thanks. You continue to be a valuable and interesting educator, says Kate.
Thanks, Kate. Yeah, I have not tried diatomaceous earth. That's good. You want to be really careful when you apply that and make sure you're wearing a mask, because it can get in your lungs, and it's basically, you know, the bodies of little silica diatoms, and that will cut your lungs up. So make sure you're being very careful when you apply that stuff. It's great stuff, mm-hmm. and it does work on a number of different insects. So that might be worth trying around the base of the squash plant.
But it is like broken glass. I mean, that's the, it's
it
a silica-based
like
thing.
Glass.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. very, very, very fine, and you can inhale it deep into your lungs, and it will do damage. So be sure you're masked up when you're using diatomaceous earth. So what was the first question?
First question was about the small caterpillar-like critter about an inch long, light brown.
So I don't know if it has, the question would be, does it have legs? If it doesn't have legs, it could be something like a fly larva. There are thousands of species of flies that overwinter in the soil, and a lot of those are our predatory hoverflies. They're good guys. We want them there. They provide winter food for birds. And so the nematodes would eat those as well. Any predaceous beetles would be hunting those and feeding on those. So I don't know. Unless she could bring it into the plant clinic or send a photo, we can't get an ID. She could take a picture and put it up on iNaturalist. There are lots of entomologists on iNaturalist, and they know the full life cycle of the things that are out there that I don't know enough about. and so the entomologists will give you IDs. The program itself will try and give you as close an ID as it can. Usually can get you the genus or at the highest level family. So it'll tell you whether it's a fly or a beetle or something where it's falling in a larger group. But it often can get an ID to genus and sometimes to species. So she could take a picture and put it on iNaturalist and then also send it to the plant clinic and see if they can come up with an ID for her.
Okay, I'm taking notes as we go along for the things to put up in links. Seriously, to put iNaturalist up on the website and to make sure that I put the bug sheet back up.
You bet. And if you use Seek with iNaturalist, Seek mm-hmm. is another app that works with iNaturalist. You can take a picture of a plant, mm-hmm. and it will find and snap the best picture of that plant for identification purposes, and then you can usually get to genus or species.
Okay. Two things like using either diatomaceous earth, as Kate suggested, these basically grind up the animal's exoskeletons, don't they?
Yeah, sure. These cut through that exoskeleton. The exoskeleton often is, it's not a whole, there are joints in it where that material can get through, and then it cuts into the viscera and the soft tissues of the insect as well.
Hmm. All right. So with that and with everything else, though, too, and I'm realizing that it's not just when you talk about, pest control goop in the garden, but also for things like fertilizer. You want to use as directed and not think, more will help, right?
Right. Absolutely. The problem with a lot of people is that, especially if they're using chemicals, they're over-fertilizing, and especially on lawns, we know that that's getting into the stream and wreaking havoc in the stream by eutrophication. So what we recommend at Master Gardeners is to apply your fertilizer weekly, which means mix it up in a half-strength batch and apply it more often over time. That way you know you're not going to burn. Of course, with the organics, it's really hard. They don't have a high enough nitrogen content, really, to burn your plants terrifically. But weekly is kind of a rule of thumb.
Okay. There's a couple of key phrases that really help to remember. That weekly is one that I had forgotten. There's sleeps, creeps, and leaps.
Right.
And then, of course, one year a seed and 7 years a weed.
Right, so, right. Yeah. All our little ways of hanging on to information.
There's a lot of it. I don't understand how you keep track of all of it yourself, because it seems like there's just a bottomless well of information there. But
I wish.
So talk about things like fertilizer, though, and soil amendments. I mean, are there times in a plant's life cycle when it's best to apply, or is any time a good time?
Well, you want to apply fertilizer during the plant's growth phase. So, in spring and maybe through summer, especially if it's a vegetable, you want to be applying fertilizer while the plant is actively growing. Once it starts setting fruit, applying fertilizer is not going to help, because it's not growing vegetation at this point. It's growing it's trying to reproduce. So flowering and fruit, once you see those stages, maybe you can back off on the fertilizer. It's why we tell people fertilize your berry vines early in the season, because they're going to put on immense growth early on. And that fertilizer is going to get taken up and be useful for them. If you put it on now, they're kind of done growing. And the fertilizer can then get leached away,
Mm-hmm. And how about things like refreshing the compost? Because I'm still dealing with that. I was talking to you a few weeks ago about the grass clippings that had gotten a little they sort of turned into mats.
So,
yeah. Well, they got slimy and then dried out. So I was thinking of refreshing the grass on that and pulling the old stuff off.
You can keep piling stuff up in your compost pile, and then turn it every few weeks. I just lasagna layer stuff into my compost as it comes out of the garden. Mm-hmm. And then, I turn it more like every month or two, because I'm kind of a lazy composter. I kind of turn it when I go, oh, I need some compost. I better turn this and make sure it breaks down. You can keep adding through the growing season, and then turn it kind of at the end when you're going to clean up your garden. You want to turn the pile that you had started and start a new one to maybe overwinter. I keep three bins going. So two that are working and one that's the finished compost pile that I sift the compost from.
All right. So, here again about putting the actual compost on the garden, is that something you would do before the season starts? You wouldn't refresh the compost on the garden?
Yeah, you can side dress during the growing season with compost. That's fine. That's a great way to, do a little fertilization and mulching at the same time. You just kind of toss it in at the base of the plant, water it down through the mulch, or water it into the soil.
That's a great way. Side dressing is old. That's what people always used to do. Mm-hmm. You know, usually they had manure mixed in with their compost, and so they might have had a higher nutrient content than some of our compost now has. But yeah, it's a great way of fertilizing through the summer.
Can you put mulch or fertilizer on? I mean, not fertilizer, but, you know, mulch or just coverings. Can you put it on too thick? I mean, can it stop the little guys from popping up through the layer if they haven't come up already?
Oh, yeah. No, you don't. You don't mulch until you've got your seedlings up.
Mm,
you know, okay. you don't want to mulch. But then the other reason for that is all those critters that like to hide in the mulch are going to just see those seedlings as a buffet.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure the plants are up and established before you start mulching heavily for the summer heat.
Mm-hmm.
But usually most people have their, you know, they've started their peppers in a greenhouse or their tomatoes, and they're putting those in, and they're good substantial plants, mm-hmm. and you can mulch right away.
Okay. Lynn Kuntzman from Jackson County Master Gardeners, always a pleasure. Lynn is always out on Wednesdays, aren't you, at the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center?
I am. Mm-hmm. I am right here. I'm ready to go to work in the nursery, and I'm hoping people come out and buy native plants from us.
Okay. If a question occurs to you when you're listening over the course of the week, send it along an email, and I'll save it for Lynn, jx@jeffnet.org. Lynn, always a pleasure. Talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye.